Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Right, we're just a few weeks away from our first ever live edition of the Race F1 podcast on February 12th. So far, we've got a great venue, King's Place in London, as part of Pod Live. We've got me to host, Scott Mitchell-Malm to give lengthy answers, and a very special guest in Ted Kravitz. So Ted, we've got to work out what we're going to talk about. What's there to look forward to in 2023 that we can get into in the live show, do you think?
Let me start by telling you a story about Murray Walker. There you go. Good start. He always used to say at the beginning of a season, you know, Formula One has an amazing ability of reinventing itself year by year. And I used to think it's a funny thing to say, but you know, the more I think about it, the more he's right. And even though we don't have new cars this year, right, slightly different with the race, ride height, blah, blah, new tyres, we do have so many other new things that are worth talking about. We've got new drivers, we've got rookies, more than one, a couple of rookies, and we've got new team bosses. That's what I'm also looking forward to seeing how that's all going to work. And then, of course, we've got the small matter of the World Championship. Will we be, at the end of 2023, talking about Max Verstappen, a three-time world champion?
There's loads of stuff to look forward to this season. That's going to fill about 40 minutes of our 75 minutes. Scott, can your song and dance routine fill the rest?
It probably could if you would unshackle me and just let me, you know, have full creative license on it. Part of it for me that I think we can get into really nicely is the subject of rivalries, old and new, because I would like to think we're going to see some familiar fights in 2023, but we're also going to see some new ones as well. I'm really optimistic about that. So I think that's a good subject for us to get into. And obviously it won't just be us. Maybe we'll have a few interesting insights from our audience as well.
Well, this is great. The running order is coming together very, very well. I think we've got to have some kind of audience interaction. We'll definitely have a few questions. We'll have a few bits of feedback from the audience. Ted, do you know anyone who's handy with a microphone and who's good at doing a bit of broadcasting, moving around? Because we could do with someone who could go out among the people.
Well, what are we? February the 12th. Is it going to be warm enough for shorts? Yes, of course it'll be warm enough for shorts. I'll bring my pink shirt and my shorts on, and I'll get down there with the microphone.
And of course, I think we should also hang around a bit at the end, say hello to a few people. Will there be the chance, Ted, to give a few autographs?
Definitely. Does anyone actually ask for autographs anymore? But we can go and meet everybody and say hello.
Yeah, it's going to be great. All part of Sport Pod Live, a live podcast festival. We're there on February the 12th. That's a Sunday. Nice early afternoon slot. So if you're an F1 fan, it's just going to be a great event to come to. Hopefully we've got so much to talk about, we're going to struggle to fit it all in. So to get your tickets, head to sportspodcastgroup.com/pod-live. That's sportspodcastgroup.com/pod-live. Get your tickets and we will see you there.
The Athletic.
The race is on, and Fred Vasseur has spent the last couple of weeks getting his feet under the table at Ferrari, and now he's faced the media for the first time to lay out his plans. So is he expecting a championship win? What's going to change under his leadership? And how's he going to handle what's arguably the biggest job in F1? I'm Ed Straw, and joining us to answer those questions and many more are Scott Mitchell-Malm and Ben Anderson. Well, Scott, hello. Like me, you were in the virtual media gathering Ferrari put on with Fred Vasseur. What did you make of it all?
Yeah, it was a good opportunity to speak to Fred before. I thought it was good that they did something before the car launch, because those things are hectic enough. You don't need to be trying to get a look at what I was about to say, the F176, but who knows what the Ferrari is going to be called this year, because that follows absolutely no naming convention, does it? You don't want to be dealing with, obviously, what's his vision for Ferrari? How does he view certain areas when you're also trying to sort of focus on the car, and you've got the drivers as well. So it was a nice opportunity in a slightly more relaxed environment to hear what he has to say. I don't think there were any great surprises in his answers to several questions, but at the same time, I think on one or two issues in particular, which we'll come into in this one, things like team orders and how he looks at Charles Leclerc's contractual situation, I think he's got quite a sensible view. And there are some question marks over what he can achieve at Ferrari, naturally, because of the problems around the team and exactly how much autonomy he'll have. But I would be, if I were a Ferrari fan and I'd heard everything that Fred said today, I'd at least be cautiously optimistic that he's going into it with sort of the right approach on some key issues.
Yeah, and it was good to get used to him wearing his Ferrari blazer, something we'll see. Well, we'll see a lot in airports this year. They don't tend to wear those blazers so much on race weekends, expressly team kit, but there we go. And Ben Anderson, we've both been around for multiple regime changes at Ferrari. So what do you make of the initial impression Vasseur has made compared to his predecessors?
Well, I mean, he is bound to make a better impression than Marco Mattiacci did. He was one of the more bizarre recent appointments, I think, to wear the coveted Ferrari blazer. A guy who just wore sunglasses permanently, I seem to recall. I guess it was Ray-Bans at the time. I think they were sponsoring Ferrari in 2014. And he would wear them even inside in the Ferrari hospitality when he was about to speak to the media. So, he didn't create a great impression. Obviously, Ferrari have been through a kind of recent sequence pre Mattia Binotto of kind of marketing men at the helm of the Formula One team. And I didn't feel like that ever really worked. Binotto was, I guess, a more sensible appointment because he had the engineering background. But in the end, that hasn't worked out. It was maybe too much to expect him to make the leap from there to running the whole thing. And to me, Fred Vasseur feels like the sort of team principal they should have had after Arriva Bene, because he's got the kind of all-round mix of engineering background, management skills, people skills, worldly wise, steeped in, you know, motorsport experience. He's been around the block in various different championships and in F1 too now. So he's probably on balance the best fit for Ferrari on reflection.
So is your expert analysis, Ben, that Vasseur is somewhere between Marco Mattiacci and Jean Todt?
I don't know.
Which I think is genuinely one end of the Ferrari team boss spectrum to the other.
I guess we'll see how he gets on. But I remember when we recorded a video for the race, kind of suggesting, you know, alternative team principals to Mattia Binotto, and you know, Vasseur was obviously heavily linked with the role even then. And I gave some banal glib remark about, oh, I'm not, you know, not sure about Fred. It's a big step up for him. But the more I've reflected on it and considered his kind of breadth of experience and his skill set, I think it's a good balance. I think he's the sort of guy Ferrari should have been trying to hire when they flicked Arriva Bene, or probably when they lost Domenicali, actually. And, you know, they've had these years in the wilderness, and Scott, you've reported many times on the kind of revolving door at Maranello as far as team principals go. And I think that they've finally settled on a sensible solution. I think it's a shame that it's come at Mattia Binotto's expense. I think it would have been a good setup to have a guy like Binotto, who's steeped in the culture of Ferrari and obviously a very, very well-respected and talented engineer, leading the technical side of the team, which he did very well, even under the kind of more chaotic leadership of people we've mentioned, to have him working alongside Fred, would have been the most potent combination, but we are where we are.
Just coming back to the point you're making about Mattiacci and glasses, I always remember the first weekend he attended in Shanghai. It was one of those really gloomy Chinese Grand Prix weeks where it never seemed to get light. And apparently, because he'd flown overnight or something, he was really tired getting in there and he hadn't slept. So he had his glasses on all the time because he had bags under his eyes. But it did look hilarious, and it was a bit of a thing on social media as well. And if it was today, it would be even more so, because social media, we weren't quite at peak Twitter, for want of a better word, at that stage. But I remember, I think on the Sunday of the weekend, someone from Ferrari asked a small group of us why everyone was joking about the glasses and everything. And I just remember saying, because if you wear sunglasses in the dark, you look like an idiot. And it was just so obvious. But Marco Mattiacci never really recovered from that. So Fred Vasseur has got his eye gear right for his first proper public appearance. So that's a big tick in the box. The championships will come flooding in. But let's get a little bit more into the detail of what Fred Vasseur said, Scott. We'll open up with your broader impressions of what Vasseur's saying. Now he has laid out those targets, he certainly wasn't afraid to make very clear that winning the championship is the immediate objective.
Yeah, I think that just reflects, you know, being realistic. He knows that is what is expected of Ferrari. Whether it should be expected of Ferrari given their recent history is another matter. But despite the ups and downs, even in the last decade and a half, the fact is that this is F1's most scrutinized team with enormous resources behind it and tremendous history. So the expectation will always be to succeed, and the ambition has to be to win. That's really what Fred was saying, that it just wouldn't be ambitious enough to say second or third would be okay this year.
He can't say anything else, can he, basically?
No, exactly. It's very much a what else do you want him to say in that scenario? But around that, it's sort of how you present it. Do you come across arrogant, or do you come across ambitious but realistic? And I think Fred's in that category. I think he's very much in that realistic category. He knows that, I think he believes that the individual ingredients are there at Ferrari to be successful. It's just about putting them together. He wants to make it clear that he's not arrogant enough to think that he can come in after 2 weeks and say, right, this needs to change, this needs to change, this needs to change. So there's a bit of a review analysis process going on at the moment, looking into various weaknesses of 2022. We will get into them in a bit more detail later on. But I like the way that he has come in. There seemed to be a nice or at least well-mannered handover from Mattia Binotto, which surprised me. I genuinely didn't expect to hear that there was a little bit of crossover between them, with Binotto helping out Vasseur at the start just to sort of get into it. I honestly cannot think of another example of that happening in the in recent history of F1. Where a team boss on his way out is still there in some capacity when the new guy starts, when they've come in from outside, and the other guy and the incumbent team boss is moving on, especially when we think that there was some kind of fallout at the end of last year for Binotto. So it feels like Vasseur has lent on that kind of element, the experience within Ferrari, his predecessor. He's looking at speaking to Jean Todt as well, who he's known for a very long time, to try and get some advice on that side. And then he's going to take some time just to see how Ferrari operates. There'll be some things that he can only learn through the season. There'll be some things he can learn in the short term, but he's promised that he's not afraid to take action if he sees fit. And it sounds like he will have enough autonomy to make some changes. So like I said, cautiously optimistic based on what he said, how he said it, how in theory it seems it's going to work. It's not, it doesn't look like a doomed appointment from the beginning, which I genuinely think in Ferrari terms is actually quite positive.
That's the minimum you need at the starting point of this. But it does show also he's very much in this phase of fact-finding, because if you think about it, it's a big organisation, isn't it? He's been there 2 weeks just over in terms of doing that job. Yes, he'll have been preparing a little bit before that, but there's a lot to learn and understand. And while you can perhaps get a very quick idea of the problem areas, understanding how to fix them is the big challenge. But yeah, it's all wrapped up in this general desire to be able to fight for championships and actually make things work. And I guess that's the thing, isn't it, Ben? The championship's the target, but it's really about being in the mix a little bit more firmly for the championship. It's not as if they miss out on winning the Constructors' Championship and the Drivers' Championship by 1 point or something, that'll be a failure. And if they get a couple more points, it's a triumph. But they need to be much more convincing than they were last year.
Yeah, absolutely. That challenge hasn't gone away. I think this is where you start to understand the big difficulty for Vasseur coming in. He's pincered between the longer term objectives of trying to understand the Ferrari system, the culture, how it all meshes together, why it hasn't been working properly, because let's face it, he wouldn't be there if there weren't changes that needed to be made at some point. Otherwise, Mattia Binotto should just continue in his previous role. And he's got to balance that need to get in there, make his mark, make it in the right way, try and change Ferrari for the better over the longer term, with the short-term objective of, well, you have to be fighting for the championship and ideally winning both of them. And to that end, what impact can he really have coming in January when the technical direction is set, when he's saying all the ingredients? I mean, this is kind of a banal line that all incoming team principals will usually say about their new environment. We have all the ingredients we need to be successful. We just need to put them together in the right way. To be honest, whether Ferrari succeeds in the championships this year is not probably going to be much down to him. He's kind of trusting to the system that already exists, just kind of course correcting itself and not making as many mistakes as it did last year. And that some of the work that Binotto and the people working under him will have already put in place, you know, such as fixing the engine reliability. We talked about that on a previous edition of the podcast, the sort of virtuous cycle that you can enter into if you fix one specific integral problem, how it can give you not unintended, but residual benefits that improve your overall outlook. I don't think Fred will have any control over that. So he's kind of got to sit there and cross his fingers that Ferrari's going to work better in the championship fight this year than it did last year. And that will buy him the time he needs to make the bigger structural changes that allow Ferrari to be on a more secure footing for the longer term and when the rules change, obviously, in 2026.
Yeah, and things like the car and engine, he hasn't got any influence over in meaningful terms. The die is already cast, at least, yes, there's a little bit in development or whatever in some decisions. But that's basically going to play out as it plays out. Scott, when Binotto left and Vasseur was first appointed, we talked a lot about the role of the senior management, the power dynamic at the top. What do we know about how his leadership is going to work in terms of how he works with Benedetto Vigna and John Elkann, the big cheeses at Ferrari?
Yeah, so I got the impression from Fred that the relationship with Vigna in particular is going to be important. That's the CEO team principal relationship, which I think historically, in recent history, that it's that CEO element is the CEO is the sort of direct port of call there. I think the relationship with the chairman is obviously important, but if you look back at Louis Camilleri, for example, we talked about this when Binotto was under pressure and when Binotto was leaving. It was Camilleri that Binotto had the strong relationship with, and Camilleri's exit did always look like that was a key Binotto ally heading out the door. So when Vigna came in, that was and Elkann as chairman, that just felt like a dynamic there that hadn't picked Binotto but has now picked Vasseur. So now I think Fred will be tasked with the day-to-day running of the team, the management. Obviously, he's in charge of the sporting division at Ferrari, so he has a lot of responsibility and power. How much ultimate authority he has, not entirely sure. I get the feeling that Vigna will have a bit more of a hands-on role now. I think a bit more of a closer relationship between the two of them will allow maybe better communication. Maybe Vigna will be a bit more inclined to not meddle, but pay close attention to the F1 team because, like, his man is in charge. And Fred's sort of suggestion was that that's fine. Like, that doesn't matter because their communication so far has been strong. And as long as the collaboration is clear and the collaboration is there, then it doesn't matter who is ultimately the line manager for what and who has the ultimate say, because they'll be working together to that end goal. And it's a nice idea in principle. Whether it can work in practice, let's find out. The key thing will be that not only is Ferrari going to have a CEO that actively engages with the F1 team, but also listens to the F1 team and acts in the F1 team's best interest. It will be futile if Fred's going to dinner two or three times a week and spending every day on the phone to a CEO that just overrides him on everything.
Yeah, there's some alarm bells there for me. I think it's all very well saying, yeah, everything's crystal clear and we've got this, you know, perfect relationship that can work when, you know, your prior situation was running a different F1 team quite autonomously and you dealt with this guy because you had a, you know, commercial technical tie-up with the manufacturer. When Vasseur was team principal at Renault, he had massive conflict with the existing structure there over where the delineation of responsibility exactly lay. you know, he couldn't work alongside Cyril Abitbol, who's really in charge. And in the end, he walked because he wasn't prepared to be micromanaged or have two different directions and ideas of how to run the team collide with each other. And it's fine if they can start out in, you know, the honeymoon phase being, yeah, quite clear, you do this and I do that. But if Scott's right and the CEO is going to have a more hands-on role in how the F1 team works, how far does that extend? Would he start to overreach? Would he start to tread on Vasseur's toes? If that happens, it's a repeat of the Renault nightmare. And Fred, you know, given what he did at Renault and the kind of personality is, I don't think he'll stand for that. I think they'll either clash and he'll just walk, or he'll have to say to Elkin, look, it's him or me. I can't work with a guy who's just going to undermine me. I need the autonomy to be able to run things the way I want to run them. And hopefully they've hired him to do that.
The comparison I draw is to McLaren, where there is, or has been in the last few years, I think, a functioning CEO team principal structure with Zak Brown and Andrea Seidel, and now it's Zak Brown and Andrea Stella. But the key difference there is that Zak Brown is the CEO of a racing division. He is not CEO of a broader company with lots of different responsibilities and areas to focus on. He is in charge of making the racing division successful, and he empowers his team principals to run the F1 side of that as best he can. He backs that F1 boss to the hilt, and he engages in the areas that he is strongest on. So that's the commercial side and dealing with the board. That's great. That is a superb structure. I really rate that kind of setup. And what I said at the end of last year was that I see no reason why Ferrari shouldn't have a competitions CEO, someone who is in charge of the sporting side. That, you know, that could incorporate the F1 and the hypercar program with their Le Mans return, for example. But you at least have someone who is more devoted, engaged on the racing side and knows the racing side, not someone who sort of comes in from afar every now and again and acts like they know best. We don't know what level of relationship the Vigneault-Vasseur dynamic will turn into. It could be a positive, but there is still just enough of a disengagement there with the corporate side of Ferrari that where it becomes a problem is if Fred doesn't have the authority to do stuff and is being forced to go down certain paths or follow a certain direction from someone who ultimately doesn't really know what the F1 team needs. So let's just see how that one plays out. We might not see any outward signs of it this year, but if it goes as badly as the Renault one did, then at least there is history of Fred saying, I'm not having this.
And as you say, things like this can look great from the outside. It's only when they're put under pressure by external forces. And those external forces, I would say, are the reaction of people in the Italian media in particular to what goes on track. Is the CEO going to be keen to respond or be seen to respond to the Italian media saying this isn't good enough if the on-track performance isn't good enough? We don't know. Ideally, they need to be focused on evolving the team, evolving Ferrari, making it better, constant improvement. And if they constantly improve, they will get there. That's how it works. As Fred has said, they've got everything they need. Get a little bit better each day, put one foot in front of the other. Eventually, they'll get to that point where they're fulfilling their potential. But there's all these other factors that can come into it. And yeah, one of those confounding factors historically can be somebody in a CEO position who doesn't quite get it and doesn't realise that, particularly in sporting competitions, which are a very odd environment, they're not strictly business environments. The rules don't work in the same way. They can find that their interventions are quite counterproductive. So we'll see how it pans out. But I agree with the point that if Vasseur doesn't like it, he can always just wander off. He's got other interests in motor racing. Obviously, his full attention is on Ferrari, but he's not going to be going hungry if he leaves Ferrari, let's put it that way. So he does have that freedom and flexibility. We'll come back to Ferrari in a minute. And in fact, Ferrari will be a talking point when we do this show, because we do have our first live podcast in London on the afternoon of February the 12th. That's a Sunday. It's part of Pod Live, and the organisers of the event are offering a 20% discount on the remaining tickets. To get one of those, you need to use the link in the episode description for this podcast and enter the code LIVE20. That's LIVE 20. LIVE 20. If you're coming along, we will see you there.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Well, Scott, there's been a lot of talk about Ferrari expected improvements in recent weeks, various rumblings going around, particularly in the Italian media. What impression did you get from Vasseur about the improvements on that score? And also, what else is going to immediately change under him?
Yeah, so I guess we can break this down into the engine reliability, the strategic mistakes that we saw last year. I think those are the two sort of primary ones, but also possibly a bit of team management, driver management. But we'll park the team orders, driver stuff, because I've got sight of our running order, and I know that you want to come to that later, Ed. So I'll focus on reliability and strategy for now. It sounds like Ferrari's satisfied with what they've seen in the factory, on the dyno, in the simulations over the winter, that they have got on top of the problems that caused them so much issue last year, which I believe is primarily on was primarily on the MGOH side. I think that's what caused Leclerc's failure in Baku and Sainz's failure in the Austrian Grand Prix specifically. And in the second half of the year, certainly, probably more towards the end of the first half of the season, Ferrari was running basically with a slightly detuned version of the power unit. I think it was the MGUH, where the that they had to basically work it less because of this underlying reliability issue that was openly admitted to at the time by Mattia Binotto. It couldn't be fixed in the short term. And the upshot of that is that Ferrari lost performance on the engine side for the rest of the season. Now, this was probably... this has been estimated to be around maybe a couple of temps worth of performance. And I think what's happened is that the suggestion from Ferrari is that they've solved that. So they've got that back over the winter, because you are allowed to make reliability changes in this era of the engine freeze. And if you had to turn your engine down for reliability reasons, if you fix it on reliability, you get that performance back. So it's not a performance gain per se. It's sort of a performance reset to what the engine was always theoretically capable of. But what Fred batted away was a specific suggestion of the rumours that there has been a 30 brake horsepower fine from Ferrari over the winter. And he batted that away. And I think, I wonder if the reason he has is that it's very easy to do that because there hasn't been a 30 brake horsepower increase on the power unit over the winter. I wonder if they've got a performance gain relative to what they ended the season with, that is basically the equivalent of 30 brake horsepower. And I think where you find that on the MGUH is in the torque delivery. I think it's early in the power band, so the total output of the power unit remains the same, but you get a punchier delivery on throttle, basically. So that's where you gain your... and you can still gain your 0.2 of a second in performance there without actually having 30 brake horsepower more, if that makes sense. So,
but you can also do it by just driving the turbo harder and that kind of thing. It's all about the way you run it, isn't it, across the board? The better the reliability margins are, the more you can run it in every single area. So it could be like an aggregation of all sorts of little different things.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think that was unsurprisingly sidestepped from Vasseur, but done in a way that you can read between the lines. You know that they have clearly found something over the winter because of their reliability improvements. So that's good. The other thing that's worth discussing is the way Fred addressed strategy. I think it's been a thing for Ferrari for a long time to be very careful of throwing any individuals under the bus on strategy. I think the main strategy chief there is still Iñaki Rueda, who is, in the little dealings I've had with him when he's done briefings, and I remember in Monaco in 2019, he actually walked us through their entire like strategy software and how they make decisions live in the race, which is really interesting. Now, he's a very nice intelligent, clearly talented individual who becomes the face of all of the operations and systems that come together to make Ferrari's strategy calls and decisions. So easy to put the blame on him and his colleagues on the pit wall or wherever and say, why do you not just replace person X? Because they keep making strategy calls. What's really interesting from what Fred said is I think he might have already, in the first couple of weeks, got a bit of an indicator that he doesn't like the way Ferrari's comms work on strategy. Because he mentioned communications a couple of times and having like a clear flow of information, not overloading it with too many voices, not wasting too much time getting to a decision. And I thought that was too specific to just be a general observation of how F1 strategy works, overall. So I'm wondering if he's found something within the system, the structure there, that he might start to make changes to. He's still in the process of reviewing it. And he has also said that he will trust the team that already exists. So I don't think there'll be any personnel changes on strategy for Ferrari at the start of the year. I think they might change the way they do things slightly. But then if there continue to be issues as the season starts, Fred says he will take action and change things thereafter. So I was actually quite impressed with how he handled all of that.
When it comes down to it, the strategic function of a team is about taking a vast number of data inputs, lots of them live, changing as it happens, and condensing all that into usable information and almost getting an output from it. And I imagine that it will be, yeah, in the way that's done. And then, as you say, the way the comms are connected to that. Because we do know there were clear examples where there were arguments being had about what to do on strategy. Interlagos qualifying is the great example where they wanted to send Carlos Sainz out on the intermediates. And he and his race engineer were like, no way, this is slicks. And they were absolutely right. So that's probably the right answer from Vasseur. And it's interesting that he is very gently hinting they might have an idea there. Because I would say strategy is the area where you can make the big gains. Because as you say, it's not like they're just sitting there making it up with just somebody sitting there, just say, oh, I'll bring him in for half an hour or whatever. There's a lot going on there, a lot of good processes, a lot of data. They'll have their race room where they're following everything that's going on. So it might just be fine-tuning that's required to make that work a lot better than it currently is. That seems to me to be the most obvious low-hanging fruit, doubly so when you consider how many points last year were lost to strategy.
Yeah, and also, you know, Vasseur can come at this from, you know, an outsider's perspective and also one that takes account of running much smaller operations that have to think a little bit more lightly on their feet and also not overcomplicate something that, you know, F1 is very fond of making things very, very difficult and technical and hard to understand. Sometimes you just need a good old-fashioned eye test or, you know, just trusting your kind of experience of racing in the real world to make a quick decision. And Vasseur will be able to, I think, do that perhaps better than someone like Mattia Bonotto, who was steeped in Ferrari culture for many, many years. It's very difficult, I think, for someone who's worked with some of these people for a very, very long time to see the wood for the trees in this kind of instant. What do you need to change? How do you address challenges with particular individuals or how they're working when you're part of that and have been for a very long time? When you come in from the outside, you can just say, well, I've got no pre-existing relationships here with how the team works. You can just call it as it is and just take a completely fresh look at how everything runs. And sometimes a little bit of the small team wider motorsport experience can be quite good, I think, for kind of refreshing an outlook and just showing perhaps a team that's got a little bit too embedded in complication, just to look at things a bit more straightforwardly. That could be quite useful, I think, to a team like Ferrari.
Yeah, and it's certainly a lot better than the desire for bloodletting and scapegoating and just changing someone because the people they've got are clearly good. And it's rare that it's just somebody just not being very good. That's just not how it works. But particularly when you've got the multiplication in size of teams and how much they're doing and how much data, it's easier for really little small things to trip you up. So you've got to go over it with a fine-tooth comb as well. And as we talked about briefly earlier, Ben, Vasseur, he's the fifth Ferrari team principal in the past decade. He was asked what he could learn from some of them, notably Jean Todt, Mattia Bonotto. What is there to learn in terms of Ferrari do's and don'ts from his predecessors, besides, of course, sunglasses etiquette?
Well, I was considering this question before and thinking, well, if I was Fred Rousseau, I wouldn't want to spend too much time thinking about what my predecessors had done. Or, you know, I know he mentioned Jean Todt and, you know, how he has a pre-existing relationship there. And of course, he speaks to him all the time. But I wouldn't be going to him for loads of advice. I think Fred should bring his own perspective, his own independent perspective, and trust his own experience and instincts to kind of take, as I say, account of how Ferrari works in the widest sense from a completely fresh point of view. And use that independence and, you know, lack of historic ties to enact the changes that need to be made. You know, he can go in there and properly get an overview of how Ferrari works, independent of individual relationships or history or prior dynamics, and then confront any challenges that he perceives head on without fearing about damaging particular relationships or taking account of prior politics. So I would avoid, if I was him, too much of, you know, lessons from history. Everyone's different. You know, he's, as we discussed before, Vasseur is a very different prospect as a team principal to someone like Arriva Bene or Matty Acci or even Domenicali or even Jean Todt, who's obviously been out of that game for a long time. So I'd very much advise that he stays true to himself and is his own man in this, because he's been hired, I think, for the fact that he blends a lot of the right aspects that previous Ferrari team principals haven't quite had in terms of their chemistry. They've been good in certain areas, but haven't maybe had the overall mix of talents that the team needs.
I think perhaps where there may be something to learn, definitely you don't want to think, well, let's recreate Jean Todt era Ferrari, because that one works, because that just doesn't work, because the Ferrari that Jean Todt, when he first climbed onto the pit wall at the 93 French Grand Prix, has got very little to do with the Ferrari in 2023 when Vasseur's there in Bahrain on the pit wall. But some of those little things of culture and the little things that are done in Maranello and the forces that are at play, it's useful to be cognizant of those and have some understanding of those little bits. A very small example I come up with, something Ross Brawn talked about in the book he did with Adam Parr, was the fact that when he moved to Ferrari, they were basically distributing press cuttings throughout every department in Maranello, sort of shoving the media opinion in the face of everybody who was working there on the F1 team, which really wasn't good, particularly when that team was struggling at times. So there's little things you can maybe learn and look out for. But yeah, I think in principle, it makes a lot of sense. You want to make sure the culture you impose is correct. There's always things you can learn from the past, but what it never is, oh, you want to do what Luca de Montezemolo did with Niki Lauda in the 70s. It's got nothing to do with anything now. John, whoever, you know, there's little bits to learn, but not a great deal. Scott, he did talk a little bit about the way the team operates and sort of started to touch on culture. What did you make of what he said there? I thought he was a bit less compelling on culture, because he said, well, basically all race teams are the same. And in Formula One, that's not quite the case, is it?
No, it's not. I think he was being very, very careful, because he knows that this has been pinpointed as a particular area that Ferrari has struggled. And I think he's being careful not to say the wrong thing there. That's how it came across to me. He was focused much more on sort of the passion that they have and how the passion is a positive thing. Talked about wanting to bring his racing spirit into the organization, even though it's already a team of proper racers, as he called it. And I almost felt like there was a sort of reticence to admit that it is potentially a slightly bloated organization with too much of a fear-based working culture, a fear of failure permeating the organization. And I don't really understand why, because Binotto was so flat out over the last few years at acknowledging that that existed and that that had sort of festered a bit within Ferrari and needed to be improved. If Fred felt that that is a genuine weakness for Ferrari and something that needs to improve, he could so easily have just said, well, I know Mattia talked about this before. He's done a lot of good work. I'm told that there has been real progress in this area. I aim to continue that. We need to work in a certain way. but instead he was quite vague about everything. It may well be that it was just simply, in addition to just not wanting to say the wrong thing, having only been there for a couple of weeks, he just didn't feel qualified to actually judge how the team works. It could have been that, but whatever the reason was, it did feel slightly evasive.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's probably just down to the fact that he's, I think, as he said it, 2 weeks into the job. It's far, far too short a time frame to have any real sense of the proper working culture at a team that big and that storied. So I think he's being careful there because he just doesn't know. And you're right, Scott, you know, Bonotto did a lot of work on trying to correct this fear culture at Ferrari and encourage people to take risks, which they have done to with some elements of success over recent seasons. The suggestion obviously was that it went a little bit too far in that direction to the point where there was no accountability for failure. And so maybe they need to come back a little bit to start, you know, holding people to account for their mistakes and having a little bit of a better process for self-reflection and improvement. But from Fred's point of view, he hasn't been there long enough to see that in action. And he certainly hasn't been there long enough to understand really how Ferrari works properly at a deep cultural level. So this is, as we were saying at the top of the show, this is part of his longer term objective and responsibility. He needs to spend time properly understanding that and identifying the problems and the root of those rather than steaming in and saying, yeah, I'm just going to rip everything up and run it like Sauber.
The whole thing about the tackling the problems is it's about blaming the problem, isn't it? Rather than, yes, there's accountability, but it's not a kind of you fear if you put your hand up and say there was an error, you're going to get booted out or whatever. I think that's the important thing. And look at Mercedes. They're a great example. We always talk about them in terms of culture. You know, there have been some big mistakes made at Mercedes over the past 8-9 years while they've been successful. A good example, remember that Austrian Grand Prix where, because of the temperature, they just couldn't push. They had to be so contained just to get to the finish. That was all because of a bit of finger trouble in a spreadsheet generated to define the cooling. That was exactly what it was down to. And it was just an input error. And ultimately, they felt, right, well, this actually was down to not actually the person that put it in, but because we didn't have robust systems enough in place around it. So everything's kind of checked and double-checked. And really tiny things like that can make a difference. So that's why Mercedes works so well. It's blame the problem rather than, oh, you're an idiot, off you go, which Ferrari has occasionally been at some times in the past. So you need to be avoiding that scapegoating, but that doesn't mean you just shrug it off and say, oh, these things happen. And some of Mattia Binotto's public statements, although it did start to shift a little bit last year, have sometimes seemed a little bit like that. It's kind of, well, we're doing our best, it just went a bit wrong. And I think that probably doesn't go far enough in terms of tackling that problem.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Well, one of the questions Fred was also asked, Scott, came from F1's leading Sweden-based journalist, was about the need to tie down Charles Leclerc's long-term future. So where do you think that lies in Vasseur's priority list?
I think it is very high on the priority list, but I think it can be achieved by focusing on the slightly more generic but much more important item on his priority list, which is to make Ferrari successful, because I think they go hand in hand. His point was that it's so early on in his tenure that it wouldn't be right to sort of walk through the door, sit down and say, right, Charles, we need to start talking about a new contract beyond 2024. And I agree with him. I think that would be clumsy from a point of view of right now, the only thing Leclerc needs from Ferrari is evidence that it can actually deliver on its potential and stop underperforming and underachieving. a conversation with Fred explicitly with the purpose of trying to negotiate a contract in pre-season isn't going to work unless that there is evidence of Ferrari improving in the areas Leclerc needs to see it improve. So Fred's point was that you need to focus on results, focus on performance in the short term. There is time to get the contractual stuff done. They've got a good relationship. They will come to that, but everyone's focus needs to be on getting the most out of Ferrari in the interim. And I think that there's logic to that, because if in the first half of this season it is a little bit tricky, a hangover from last year, whatever it is, then that's not a great thing. But if there are signs of either Fred making changes that improve the team, if there are signs that the team's being run better under him, if the car's a lot more competitive, if there are these signs that the World Championship challenge that Leclerc so clearly deserves to be able to put on because of his ability can actually happen at Ferrari, then I think the negotiations are much easier. So I think it should be second order to the results stuff. What he can't do, and what I'd be amazed if he did do, was take it for granted that Leclerc is loyal to Ferrari and will just stick around for just indefinitely. Because while he's only contracted to the end of 2024, I would be stunned if Leclerc doesn't want to have the next phase of his career lined up and locked down by the end of this season. I can't imagine Leclerc wants to go into the last year of his Ferrari contract having no idea what comes next.
It's one of those things, though, I think, as well as it's not necessarily there's other things to focus on, but just the way the game is laid out right now, they're not going to be able to get Leclerc to commit. I think if you said to Fred, oh, Leclerc, if you sat down with him now, he'll sign a new contract to, I don't know, the end of 28 or whatever, for parity with Verstappen, I think he'd probably say, all right, yeah, let's get that done. Great. But for all the reasons that you've explained there, the circumstances are not right to do that and achieve that. And that's why it's a great barometer of the progress that Vasseur era Ferrari is going to make. Whether Leclerc announces in, I don't know, August or whenever, that he's extended to whatever year. He's got 2 years left, but you're right. He wants to make sure he's in the best possible position in the driver market. Pretty much every team in Formula One would have some kind of interest in Charles Leclerc's services because he's a stunningly good driver. It kind of depends how the cards are lying elsewhere as to who'd be a realistic alternative. But yeah, it feels to me like Leclerc has a reasonable amount of power, certainly for the first 6 months of this year.
Yeah, and as you say, Ed, any self-respecting top F1 team would be interested in a Charles Leclerc if he's on the market and they've got an opening that aligns with the end of his contract. So I think, to Scott's point, it is a big priority for Vasseur, but he's not going to say it is, because it naturally eventuates from the other things he needs to sort out. From Leclerc's point of view, he's one of these drivers who, you know, to me anyway, seems like a character that doesn't, he's not going to be driving the team all the time and making the decisions from the cockpit. You know, that's maybe something he needs to add to his game, but it's clearly not naturally how he works. You know, he wants to use more of his capacity to drive the car basically faster than almost anyone else can. And therefore, he needs to trust the team setup and structure to make the right decisions at the right time fast enough and not get to the end of races like Monaco or Silverstone last year feeling like, you know, I don't know what the hell's just happened. You know, how have you put me in these ridiculous positions and how have you compounded these errors? He needs to feel like the answers coming from Vasseur are better than the ones that he got from Binotto, and feel like everything that the team is doing under the team principal is making sense and resulting in not needless damage to his own prospects. Obviously, Leclerc made some mistakes last year, famously in the French Grand Prix, but more often than not, he was let down by these various nebulous errors by different parts of the Ferrari system. And yeah, maybe Carlos Sainz has a better grasp of reading those situations and managing them for himself, but he's not as fast as Leclerc. So Leclerc will rightly be saying, you know, I'm the quickest guy here. I'm your best shot at winning a championship if we can, you know, stay in the game for a full season. We cannot afford for you to let me down at key points by making cat-handed decisions, prioritising the wrong driver at the wrong moment, putting the wrong tyres on and then changing them again. You need to make those calls correctly the first time round so that we're not getting into arguments after the race. And if Vasseur can implement that or Ferrari can correct itself under him, then they won't have a problem, will they? You know, Leclerc's in a great position there. Ferrari's clearly a team that wants to build around him. I feel like he's got a decent amount of political power within that organisation already. So there's no reason for him to jump ship, really, providing he's getting sensible answers out of Fred, who also is a guy that Leclerc clearly trusts because he's worked with him before. And, you know, Fred was responsible for nurturing Leclerc as a rookie at Sauber. So I feel like, you know, a part of Vasseur being installed at Ferrari is to kind of placate Leclerc from Ferrari's sort of bigger picture point of view and show him that they're prepared to make big changes to kind of make his situation a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, they're very much natural allies. And ultimately, what Vasseur wants and what Leclerc wants and what Ferrari's whole wants are all the same thing. So theoretically, all the contract stuff should take care of itself down the line if things work. Where it'll get interesting is if things aren't going quite as well as they should be. But Vasseur also, Ben, made it very clear there's no preordained number one and number two at Ferrari. Equal opportunity for Leclerc and Carlos Sainz. He did say that if at one stage we have to take action, I will take action. It doesn't matter if it's a one or the other, but if at one stage in the season I have to do something, I will do it. So do you think that's the right approach in terms of team orders?
Yeah, absolutely. We were asked to do a verdict for the race.com. Don't forget the hyphen on exactly this subject. And that was my argument, that I don't feel like the Leclerc-Sainz driver pairing is the kind of relationship that has the potential, certainly at the moment, to plumb the depths of toxicity that, say, Lewis Hamilton and Nico Rosberg did at Mercedes. I feel like they, you know, if they're in a situation where either one has to support the other to win the championship, they'll do that. So I think it's probably also the only thing Vasseur can say, but I think it is the right way to do it. It's also actually a historically consistent way that Ferrari's operated, certainly in, you know, post Schumacher, that you prioritise whichever driver after a certain point has the best chance. You know, Kimi Raikkonen and Felipe Massa did that for each other, I think, in consecutive seasons, 2007 and 2008. And I think my impression of Leclerc and Sainz's characters is that they will buy into that. Obviously, where it gets stickier is if Ferrari are in a dominant position and the two of them are very close in the championship, that's always harder to manage. But obviously, that's not the question Vasseur was asked. He's asked, you know, what if you're in a, as you're expecting, a title fight with Max Verstappen at Red Bull and you need to prioritise one driver over the other, will you do that? Well, of course, I think you would, any self-respecting team principal would. I think also Vasseur seems to be at pains to kind of quell this narrative that, you know, because Sainz was a Binotto hire, he's now vulnerable because Binotto's no longer there. And he gave some examples of, you know, being involved in trying to sign Sainz for Renault when he was team principal there briefly, and then wanting to sign him for Sauber, but the team not being good enough. So the best, I think his quip was, it's best that I just go to where whichever team Sainz is in and now I get to work with him. It's all quite glib and fun. But I think Vasseur probably does rate Sainz as a driver who wouldn't. You know, he's proven himself to be very capable. And, you know, he's a pretty no-nonsense character. So I think that they'll get on fine. And they all know that it's in their best interest to work for the overall benefit of Ferrari. So I don't really foresee any problems there, certainly in the short term.
From my perspective, the key thing with Ferrari and team orders in recent years is encapsulated in what Vasseur says, if we have to take action, I will take action. Because I think the problem hasn't been those two drivers. I don't think even the problem was when it was Vettel and Leclerc. The problem was that Ferrari just seemed to have this almost paralysis. And I think they were determined where possible, to let things resolve themselves before intervening. They did it at Silverstone last year.
Fernando is faster than you. It's the hangover from that, isn't it?
I think it is some of the hangover from that, yeah. And there's a lot of teams that are really weird about team orders. Team orders are fine. Sometimes you need them for championship reasons. Sometimes you need them because one car's quicker than the other. The team result is ultimately the priority. And I do think Ferrari have been flat-footed. So I guess, Scott, the key is when there's the first situation where the two drivers are in some way, shape or form getting in each other's way or having a battle that's allowing Lewis Hamilton to take time out of them, as happened at Silverstone, is that he's willing to intervene decisively and in the correct way. That's going to be the test, isn't it?
Yeah, it just has to be done with authority. And that could be empowering his strategy team to make sure, like, one of the things that I always liked, I did an explanation recently and it sounded a little bit unserious, but it was how Williams's new F1 boss became a meme, which was James Vowles and the Valtteri, it's James radio message. And the internet obviously had a field day with that and ran with it every single time Vowles came over the radio. But my point was that the jokey, funny side of that overlooked the authority and the responsibility that Vowles had in being the person that gave that radio message. You know, that was one step short of Toto Wolff coming onto the radio and saying, cut it out, stop being an idiot, or you need to do this. You know, it was
Valtteri, come on, which is what he does now.
but Vowles coming on the radio meant that the drivers had to take it seriously. They knew that it was serious if it was Vowles giving them that message rather than the race engineer. And I feel like Ferrari would benefit from that if they can have a system whereby the race engineer relays a lot of information, the driver can push back, have some back and forth, whatever it is. But if it gets too far, if you have one of those crunch situations, Vasseur needs to have that team running in a way that someone comes on the radio in that moment and has not only the authority to say something, but the authority that the drivers listen to them. That's absolutely key. Otherwise, you can say all these things now, all he wants, saying, oh, if I have to do something, I'll do it. That's great. But what is the system you'll put in place to make that happen? Is it Fred's just going to unilaterally come over the radio? I don't think that will happen. So he needs to put the system in place and pick someone that can actually enact that.
That comes back all to what you were saying earlier about the communication side. It's all about comms, making sure they all understand roughly where they stand before and how things are going to happen, who you're going to hear a message from, and yeah, who is the right, stop messing about, this is now absolutely serious. And ultimately, if team orders have to start being given in terms of helping championship bids, that's a good problem for Vasseur to have, but it's also going to be a stern test of his leadership, his Ferrari, and the team's capability of winning a world championship, because fundamentally, we all want Ferrari to be up there fighting, because the more teams up there fighting for the championship, the better the season is for those watching. And yeah, ideally this year we'll have Ferrari, Mercedes and Red Bull, all six drivers up there battling for wins week in, week out. All six of them go into the last race level on points. That is all I ask for. Then again, I did a few years ago ask for the championship to be decided with a pass on the last lap at the start of the season, and look how that wish turned out. Certainly wasn't quite envisaging that level of controversy. So yeah, a lot of work for Fred Vasseur to do. What we've heard from him so far is just a basic taste, but hopefully we've given you a little bit of an idea of what Vasseur era Ferrari might be like. Well, thanks very much, Ben Anderson and Scott Mitchell-Malm, for your insight. Head to therace.com and definitely don't forget the hyphen if you're going there. Listen to our sister podcasts, including Bring Back V10s, our IndyCar podcast, our Formula E podcast, plenty to listen to, and also check out our YouTube channel, both our longer videos and our shorts. Well, we're not far away now from the launches really getting going, so stay with us for everything you need to know from the world of Formula One.
The Athletic.